At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, look lies, feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome to the show. I'll give anyone credit who stayed up to watch the Astros go down 5-1 to the A's last night. And we talked about it here, how this team can't be trusted. They're untrustworthy. And the last week has certainly proven that to be the case. Sweep the Rangers, now you can't win baseball games when it matters most. And I think reputationally, the Astros, at least in this town, there's a belief that, hey, they'll come through. They've done it in the past. They'll do it now. But think about the lineup that went out there yesterday. How many of those guys would you have had to buy their jersey for the first time this year? Christian Walker, Paredes, Zach Cole. Not that there is a jersey for Zach Cole, but you get the point.
Cam, you can get it printed, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Cam the Smith, team Jesus Sanchez, Urias. That's a good bulk of the guys who made an appearance yesterday who you'd have had to buy their Astros jersey. The only time you would have been able to buy it is this year. So when we talk about this Astros team and what they have been, I think we have to stop. This season has played out in a way that's been disappointing. Of course, they still have five games to go to make good. But believing in this team because of what past teams have done, I think we are a fan base that should have looked at the roster and said to ourselves, this ain't the same guys. There's some guys floating around in the lineup, like Altuve, of course, and Correa is back. And of course, Yiner's been around a little bit. But I just listed off all these guys who you would have had to get their jersey this year. They're not who we expect them to be because just the personnel is too different. So should we be surprised that they're not playing well? No. Because they've shown themselves to be this type of team all year long. And, you know, Christian Javier went out there and did his very best. Of course, Nick Kurtz was a troublemaker from the beginning. Now, if an Astro could track a fly ball, we wouldn't have this problem, at least early on. But, of course, he gets on to start. And, of course, he comes around to score because he's been doing this to the Astros all year long. So it wasn't all about the first inning, but of course. Nick Kurtz gets on. The Astros screw something up. He scores. And then after Cam Smith hits the sack fly to level the game in the next inning, the game is over after that point. The Astros are done for. And you could sense the urgency from Jeff Blum and Todd Callis. They were talking about like how they introed the game. They were laying everything out about how, of course, the division felt out of reach. And if it wasn't before last night, it certainly is. The Mariners came back and won again. They beat Colorado, so they're now four games up. The Mariners clinch a playoff spot. Now they look to clinch the division. And you see what happened in the Detroit-Cleveland game where Scoobles pitching pretty well. He hits a guy who's offering the bunt right in the face with the fastball. He falls apart after that, so the Guardians win. So now you're a full game behind the Tigers when it comes to the final playoff spot. Looking bleak. If you don't know the situation, the Astros don't own a tiebreaker against anyone of consequence that they're going to have to try to trace down. So not only do they have to win, they have to be two games better than the teams they're chasing. They have to be two games better than the Guardians. If you look at it right now, they're a game and a half back. The half game is a tiebreaker. So you have to be two games better with five games to play while you're playing really bad baseball. They are who they are, right? If we can't say it after 157, what can we say?
Yeah, no. These are not the inevitable Astros.
Yeah. But Verlander tried to get that off because they had a division lead for the better part of the season.
And he had to take that back, after the Mariners series. Yeah. These guys aren't inevitable. Not I forgot. My brother doesn't play for this team.
And Christian Walker wasn't part of the inevitable Astros. Neither was Paredes, who's back and trying his best, as he's probably, 60% of what he can be, considering his injury. Yeah. So, yeah, they're not inevitable. I don't know if they're very inevitable is something I should say.
They are inevitable.
They're inevitable. This Astros team is very inevitable. They're not a steaming locomotive. They're not what else can we use?
They're not the Guardians. The Guardians are inevitable.
Yes, at this point they
those
are.
Those guys are inevitable.
Yes. They're not the immovable force or the unstoppable object, whatever you want to call it. Unstoppable force, immovable object, I believe that's how that goes. They're neither one of those things. They're just meh. And right now they're worse than meh. They're bad over the last four games.
They're a 80 something win baseball team,
which is kind of what a certain prediction had for them before the year. It looked like at a time when our good friend Eric was saying 100 win season was in the cards, it looked like that prediction would be wrong. Turns out sometimes people know stuff.
Fangraphs is inevitable.
Yeah, at least with the Astros. The Mariners are outplaying the Fangraph one, the Fangraph prediction, because of how hot they've been over the last month or so. So
they're like, we didn't know they'd get Suarez at the deadline. Yeah. Come on.
Naylor as well. Yeah. All the guys they
and
got.
And 60 home runs from Cal Raleigh.
Yeah, that's something no one predicted. I can't blame Fangraph.
Fishy.
You and Lance feel the same way.
It's just interesting.
It's something to take note of, right?
Doubled his career high.
He was a 30 home run guy last couple seasons, and now he's at 58. It is something to take note of.
It's crazy.
I mean, I don't like that a guy with the nickname Big Dumper is going to help end the Astros season. It's a ridiculous name.
Big target to stick a needle in. That's
all. Well, I would say that is Sean Mapes with the speculation. I don't know.
Reckless speculation.
It is very reckless. That man's having the
I'm
best.
Not alone, though.
The guy who sits in this very seat from 7 to 10 said certain things that align with what you're saying. I don't know. I like to look at someone who's far exceeding his expectations and go, you know what? Great job by you, Cal. Mm. Great job. Great job by you. How many times has that been said in this city? Great job by you, Cal. Probably not often.
No.
When it comes to sports teams.
Maybe like 2023, a couple
Hiring
times.
Hiring D'Amico, probably. Yeah. Great job by you, Cal.
Great job.
Yeah. Since that point, the first 2 years under D'Amico, Cal McNair
drafting C.J. Stroud.
Pushing for C.J. Stroud, yeah. That was the alleged way that went. That ownership really wanted C.J. Stroud.
Yeah. But ever since he big broed Caleb. No one's been saying that.
Yeah, there is a story that we'll get to from The Athletic. I don't even have a subscription to The Athletic, but they offer you a 7-day free trial. So I did it just to read the story. And I'll have to shut it down on PayPal before they start charging me.
I can send you some screenshots if you want.
I have the story already.
Okay.
I signed up for it, but PayPal and I will be having a conversation shortly about ending my subscription. But it is about C.J. Stroud. The questions that are being asked are getting a little uncomfortable. Probably for the Stroud group, because it's a lot about, hey, is he worth this? Is he worth the giant extension? Is he a guy who can be a franchise quarterback? Those questions wouldn't have been dared to be asked before the season began, but they're picking up, and not just from the national media, which has had pretty much a love affair with Stroud. As soon as he jumped on the scene, people were in love with him. That is slowly turning, although, you know, you still know that people are looking at the situation as a whole and saying there are real problems beyond C.J. Stroud. We had DJ Bienemay on earlier, impromptu. We were talking about some things. He broke down the C.J. Gardner-Johnson news. We'll talk about that. But he was he talked about where things could go if this doesn't switch up. And he, rightfully so, said, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I can see how things could go really poorly. And where the Texans, of course, further down the line than now, would have a decision to make if C.J. Stroud is someone who starts to talk about how the Texans are wasting him or not putting him in the best position, where would this franchise go? It's a far cry from, can this team be a team who contends?
Yeah.
We're in a far different place. All it took was 3 weeks, and we are now talking about the franchise as if it's in flux, maybe.
That, I mean, last week going into the Jags game, we were like, you're not a serious team if you lose to the Jags.
And they proved themselves to not be a serious team.
Yeah.
And they did it in a lot of unserious ways. Because the Jags were very willing to make their claim as the most unserious team on the field that day. And the Texans were like, hold on, wait a minute.
Watch this.
I'll show you unserious. Don't try to try us, Jags.
Yeah. Ursary, block this guy without any help.
Without any help on a pure drop back. Oh, Josh Allen High was like, oh, you guys aren't serious. See how I've been treating this kid all day? You certainly aren't serious. So we'll talk about that as we move forward. But as we close out what was a complete Astro segment, it was a debacle, man. Can they pull out of it? Why would I predict that they would? The A's have owned them over the last 7 times they've played. The A's are now 5-2. Six and two over the last 8 times they played the Astros. Excuse me. They're 6-2. The A's now own you two. That is not a sentence I should be saying.
No. The A's barely own the A's.
Yeah, exactly. Who? They don't have a home.
You're playing in Sutter Health Field.
Yeah. The A's are home insecure. They have no home. They're still waiting on breaking ground. Maybe they have in Vegas. I don't know that to be the case yet, but they're still going to be in Sacramento for a little bit. And yet, they smacked you around. And the division is almost completely out of reach. That could be done by today. They could lose the division completely by today. And if they do, then the threat of not making the playoffs as it had started to loom in that Mariners series becomes a distinct possibility if they don't pick it up starting tonight. So Hunter Brown on the mound tonight. So that should give you some hope. But Hunter Brown pitched previously just against the Mariners, and what did the Astros do? They wasted a performance. So this is where we stand. Desperate times. Can this Astros team pull out of it? I would say don't expect it, because as we started the segment, they're not the same team. The roster's very different. Now you're just hoping and praying as opposed to expecting it. All right, we'll go to break with that. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans on one of the reasons why CD isn't here anymore. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson released by the Texans. This wasn't a name check by D'Amico, but now considering the news from yesterday, D'Amico's words seem directly pointed at CD. Maybe we should have seen this coming. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Kane is in the building.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
We won't stay here for very long, but no, that wasn't like an existential thought. Like, life cycles are short compared to how long the Earth's been around. I was just looking at a video of Kyrie Irving working out and with the caption, "The Return." It's about that time. It's about that time. I talked with AJ about it yesterday. We at the time, I had not thought to think about the Rockets until the Fred VanVleet news. You weren't here for it. Obviously, you did it later in the day, Sean. But I said I wouldn't even have considered talking Rockets basketball until like next Monday, because that's when media day is. But now, Fred VanVleet is out, they say, possibly for the entire year. I'm going to go, yes, he's out for the entire year.
Let's just round up.
Let's just say he doesn't come back. But I see Kyrie working out. Jason Tatum's everywhere on my TV because he's promoting his Tatum 4s.
Ooh.
And as AJ astutely pointed out, ain't nobody wearing those shoes as far as on the court. He's saying he's not seeing it. I don't know that anyone is flocking to go
tough
get the
for my guy JT.
He's not your guy. Flocking to go get the Tatum 4s. I don't know that. I applaud the man for doing the car wash type thing where he's going around on the Today Show talking about his recovery from his Achilles. He talked about his mindset where he thought, hey, is my career over? Are they going to trade me? Stuff like that. But
I'm not wearing these either.
Yeah.
I just pulled them
up. No one's wearing the Tatum 4s. At least not no one who isn't a Boston Celtic fan or named Deuce. That's the name of his kid if you don't, or his nickname for his kid if you don't know. But like I said, we wouldn't stay here for long. I just see the videos of the guys working out.
Yeah.
And that just means the NBA season is not that far away.
I did, after the Texans loss, I did consider maybe we talk about the Rockets at some point soon.
We're getting there.
It just
got fast forwarded because Fred VanVleet got hurt.
Yeah, yeah. It was already kind of getting fast forward by what the Astros and Texans were up to.
Yeah, they were pushing the Rockets closer and closer to the front of mind.
Yeah.
Without the bad news that Fred got hurt.
Yeah, Fred, you didn't have to do that. We were going to talk
about that. Yeah, if you wanted us to focus on the Rockets, don't worry. You didn't need to give up an ACL. As I was talking with the Astros, Concept Mayhem said, not a steaming locomotive, but they are something steaming. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a pile, definitely, the last half a week or so. And we'll see if it ends tonight. All right, Texans. CD, otherwise known as Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I guess you can stop saying the nickname when he's not even on the team anymore. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson out. He apparently was not a fit. He fits the mold of a player you acquire because you think you're one or two players away, which brings a question we can ask and get to about the Texans and their evaluation of their own roster. But first, let's hear from DeMeco Ryans. This was, I believe, on the Monday after presser, where he discussed some of the big plays his defense has given up. Not, of course, not a lot of them. They don't give up a lot of points, but they have been hit with some big plays. And here's DeMeco Ryans on what might have been the cause of those.
Yeah, when you see a big play that happens on our defense, somewhere along the lines, there's a bust in communication. It all starts with communication, and granted, it hasn't been as crisp as it needs to be. So we have to play better. On the defensive side, we got to communicate better, and we got to execute the defense better. It's not been great. We see that. We have to make some adjustments there to make sure we get it correct.
And I mentioned DJ Bieniemy joined John and Lance, and he broke down one of the big plays, and all signs point to that being on Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. It was a big play that set up the Jags' winning score, the Ryan Thomas slant that went for a giant gain. You think it's on Lassiter, but once he runs Thomas Jr. out of bounds, he's looking back with the arms outstretched going, what the hell was that? And that led to some questions. And Chauncey Gardner-Johnson was the guy who was playing in the middle. Apparently, if you go by DJ Bieniemy's breakdown, and maybe he got word from the Texans, there's a coverage where Kamar Lassiter is playing to the outside. Any outbreaking route, he will cover. It was two receivers lined up on that side. And Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is playing the inside. So if he sees a route coming across his face, he's covering that. But Gardner-Johnson jumped to the outside. Kamari Lassiter anticipated that his guy wasn't going to be where he's supposed to be, so he had to track Thomas. Of course, that wasn't going to work because Brian Thomas is really fast, and Lassiter, for as well as he played last year, wasn't known as a speed guy. So once you give up inside leverage, it's a problem as long as Thomas Jr. caught it, and unfortunately he actually did catch that one, and it led to the big play. So miscommunication has been a thing for the Texans in the back end, and apparently a lot of it has been because of Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. He also hasn't been someone to take accountability for his actions. It led to problems with the other guys in that secondary, and the Texans decided after three games, you got to go.
Yeah.
The word is he's a giant problem when things aren't going well. You can kind of stomach what he's up to when you're winning because he tampers down some of his issues.
Yeah. See last year's Philadelphia Eagles.
Yes. But when the season was over, they got rid of him the first chance they could.
Yeah.
For Kenyon Green, of all people, who they cut this week off the practice squad.
Yeah. CJ Gardner-Johnson, I agree with you. You don't get to be CD Deuce when you're a free agent. CJ Gardner-Johnson made it one day longer than Kenyon Green.
Yeah.
Cesario W.
Yeah. It wasn't when at least Kenyon Green wasn't expected to be the starter in Philly.
Nah, Cesario
Gardner-Johnson was supposed to be a big piece of this defense. So I mentioned it before we played the D'Amico sound. Are the Texans bad at evaluating their roster? You know, they brought on Stephon Diggs last year, and you assume that was partly because that's a guy you add on to a team who thinks that they're pretty close. And now he gets hurt, Tank Dell gets hurt, so you're not sure what would have happened if they're all healthy. But their offensive line was a problem throughout the year, and that has remained the case this year. So when you have that big of a flaw, are you really that close? So if you're not close, you don't bring in a guy like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson because of all the problems that he could cause. So did the Texans for the second consecutive year misevaluate their roster? If we go by the offseason comments that we certainly hammered on the morning show, we're not concerned. D'Amico and I aren't concerned about the offensive line, so you shouldn't be. I would say yes, the Texans have improperly evaluated their roster 2 years in a row. Even with how good 2023 went, I didn't see a 2024 roster that was a championship roster. But you trade for Joe Mixon, who was great when he was available. Of course, Stephon Diggs was a good piece before he got hurt. But the offensive line, I thought last year, was always going to be an issue. So I don't see why you add Chauncey Gardner-Johnson unless you think you can win it all, because he only thrives in situations where you're going to be really good. I don't think the Texans have done a good job acknowledging who they are.
No. And in the, what was that, the 2024 offseason, when they go out and get Diggs and Mixon and Danielle Hunter.
Yeah.
Like, that was like they're throwing their chips in. This is what you do when you have a quarterback on a rookie contract.
You take advantage of how cheap it is.
Yeah. And it's something that this past offseason we talked about that, like, well, because they made all those moves last offseason, like, they actually don't have as much cap space, or they can't really throw around big money in this past offseason. And you see that when how they addressed their offensive line was Cam Robinson, like $10-ish million a year, and then cast offs from bad lines, Tomlinson, Ingram, Andrews, like that. That's where the chickens have come home to roost. And yeah, you're right. It Cassario kind of made the same mistake both the past two off seasons of it. It's funny. Like it seems like he evaluates the team the same way that like casual fans would, where they're just like, man, look at these receivers, Joe Mixon running the ball.
Yeah. The skill guys are pretty good, right? So that's enough.
You got you got Anderson and Hunter, you got Stingley and Lassiter. I mean, who's throwing the ball on you guys? Like, it's just very, like, just ignoring the, like, well, guys at the block, you know.
Yeah, the spine.
You got to stop the run at some point.
The spine of their defense and, well, the spine of their team. In the offensive line, the interior, the defensive line, and the linebackers, you would say, aren't championship quality.
They're really good at all the sexy positions.
Yeah, the ones, fantasy positions.
Yeah.
And the things that Get the wows online.
Yeah,
he thinks that the Texans are a highlight team, just like Adam Silver thinks his league is a highlight. Yeah, league.
So a social media team.
Yeah,
like Justin Herbert's a social media quarterback.
You're invoking Acho again. That Acho again. Remember, we had the conversation about him. But yes,
uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah, that's what he likes to have. I guess that's what they're built on. Splash. It's a lot of splash plays from the defense, the sacking of the quarterback, the DBs taking the ball away. But when it comes to the heart of the matter, they're not a team who is good in the spots that traditionally help you win big.
I will say they have invested in the offensive line.
They've just been wrong.
They've been wrong every single time.
Yeah.
They don't really have a hit on the offensive line since signing George Fant. In 2023, you know, like the 2023 line is somehow the best line of this CJ Stroud, D'Amico Ryans era. And that was a bunch of cast offs
and Laremy Tunsil
and Titus Howard. Like, it's basically it. And Shaq Mason, who was good for that 1 year, and they gave him a new contract. And then
apparently Laremy Tunsil got a hold of him and turned him into a guy who they couldn't have on the roster anymore.
Have you heard of the Versace store?
Gucci, even. How about Gucci?
So, they have those here?
So the conversation also went to, if we wanted to get rid of a guy, who could you get rid of? Well, Nick Caserio apparently has a deal that's at least has 3 to 4 years remaining on it. And then, of course, D'Amico signed his 6-year deal. He is not under any threat. But these are the uncomfortable questions that are now being asked. Who can we fire? And like in a lot of situations, money and contracts may play a part. So I'm not sure anyone can get fired or will get fired. Yeah.
CJ Gardner-Johnson.
Well, he did get fired. But he didn't have a long-term deal.
No. I mean, it is going to be $5 million in dead cap next year.
So it will affect you.
Good job, guys. But $5 million isn't like...
It's not crazy.
Huge. But it is for the... Same thing with the Stephon Diggs, for different reasons. Stephon Diggs was like actually fine. He just got hurt.
Yep.
The Gardner-Johnson one is just like a giant whiff. And yeah, I think it's fair that... I think it's fair that if you want to play the like blame game on the Texans, I do think, and I agree with you, that his job's not under imminent threat. I do think that this lands at the feet more of Nick Caserio because, like we outlined, this is a team that's built in a flawed manner.
And trust me, I know about teams being built in flawed manners, and they flash for a couple years, and then all of a sudden, hey.
Yeah, chickens come home.
All those issues. Suddenly, your offensive genius, and not here, but in Miami, can't cover up some of those flawed issues, and now you got real problems. So the Texans didn't get to the genius part of their offense to cover up
Bobby.
Some of the problems.
Thanks, Nick. And
thanks, both Nicks, honestly. And in fact, the one who's has the least amount of blame so far is Kaylee. He's only been here three.
I'm new here.
Yeah, hey, it's not my fault.
But that does not help. And I think if they keep, I'll just say, keep not breaking the 20 mark in any game, I think he's the first to go. Like, it's not who has the most blame. It's just like who's the first to go.
He's the most expendable.
I'd pick him as like he's probably the first one getting thrown overboard. Yeah. I guess after CJ Gardner-Johns.
Definitely. He's the one of the prominent.
See, we're doing
blame,
something.
Parts of the blame pie,
yeah.
Nick Caserio would be the one. And speaking of numbers, you brought up them not scoring. I got to make a correction because AI overview got me. This stat is real. The Texans are now the 12th team in the last decade to score less than 40 points in their first three games.
Whew.
Five of those previous 11 wound up picking in the top five.
Okay.
So they're on track.
Tankathon season.
Yes. And then I asked AI Overview about it, and then they just gave me the Texans as doing it a couple other times. And no, it's not the case. Yeah. So I did say that they did in C.J. Stroud's first year, and that's what AI Overview told me. Then I looked it up. Wait a minute. That didn't happen.
They scored 20 in their first – no, in their second game.
Yeah.
So that already kind of takes you out.
Yeah, so they did not do that. So just want to make that correction. But this year, under 40, 40 or under is that number, and – they're in line.
Yeah. No, there's, what was it?
To four have a teams, top five pick, yeah.
Four teams last week scored 38 or more points in week three. There's 340 balls, and Monday night was
38.
Texans have 38 on the season.
Yes.
The Indianapolis Colts have scored like 105.
Their stat line is
first
about,
time in franchise history.
Yeah, their stat line is about, hey, they finally punted. The stat line here is, we ain't even gotten to 40 yet.
Yeah.
40 points there, yet.
Like we said on Monday, there's still one, I'll say, like 100% zero questions asked earned touchdown on the season, the Nico Collins one on Monday night. The Nico Collins one last week was
a blown coverage.
Coverage bust. The Nick Chubb run, you could go, were the Bucs letting you score on that one? They have one.
They have one untainted
touchdown.
They've got one honorable touchdown so far. That's not great.
And it was an honorable one. It was a good touchdown.
Yeah, it was a good throw and a good catch.
I'd like another one, please.
On the first drive of the game for them. It was great. Nothing really since.
Is this, I guess 2013 is the answer. Never mind. I was going to say, is this like the biggest like failure of a Houston Texans season?
As far as what you combine it with expectations?
Yes, and I think it is 2013. 13
yeah,
because they lost 14 straight games.
Yeah, they're coming off a playoff appearance,
now,
of course. And
those guys started 2-0.
They didn't. It fell apart completely.
It did. Yeah. I won't lie to you. It was a shaky.
From what I remember, it was a shaky 2-0, but they got the 2-0.
I don't think they were very impressive.
Yeah, and then of course it fell apart. That was the year. Isn't that the year that
was the Schaub pick six?
Also,
year.
Was that the year that Kubiak had like a heart event or something?
Yes,
as well?
Yeah. They were so bad they gave Gary Kubiak.
He had a health issue.
Yes, it on got, Sunday Night Football.
Yeah,
or Thursday
something
night,
something like that. It was one of the standalone games, I believe. We're not there yet.
No, we. I mean,
D'Amico seems in fine health. He's probably, surely not thrilled with his team, but it doesn't. We can hope and expect that he won't suffer an issue like that.
So, week one, 2013, they beat the Chargers by 3.
Didn't they come back in that game to win it?
I think, from what I remember.
That on the road?
Yes.
I think that was on Monday night, right? From what I remember.
Like, it was a Monday night.
Yeah.
And then they beat the Tennessee Titans in overtime.
Yeah.
And then lost every other game.
Because of what they had done last year, it was the year before, It's like, oh, the Texans, they're just finding ways to win. And then they stopped finding ways to win.
Week 3 at Baltimore. This is weird. They played the Ravens, and they lost 30-9? What?
Yeah, that.
Oh, I remember the Seahawks game.
Yeah, that tradition.
Hilarious pick six in the Seahawks.
Was that a Richard Sherman?
Yes. It was like one of those disasters coming from a mile away.
You could see it happening.
Yeah.
And I think even Richard Sherman talked about it after the game about how they expected it and they knew it was coming.
Yeah, it was a boot to the right and Schaub threw it all the way back to the left. And in my head, this is how I remember it. I didn't go back and watch the All-22. In my head, watching the game, Richard Sherman was the only guy in frame of the ball. When like it panned over to all the way where Schaub was throwing, I didn't see a single Texan.
Yeah, I don't exactly remember what Sherman said after the game, but it was not complimentary of the Texans.
No,
in the play.
That's the what time he was on back then.
Yeah,
it's also the time he's on now, but
just
it was especially back then.
Particularly, yeah, because he could play and was really good at the time. All right, we'll go to break with that. We'll get to the article I did not pay for, but I signed up for the free trial just to see what they had to say. The question in the article, the headline is. Is Texans C.J. Stroud playing his way out of an extension? It's part of their weekly, the Athletic's weekly quarterback stock report. And it's all about the Texans offense and the quarterback play. So we'll get to that. It was an interesting day for Oklahoma football. The state of Oklahoma, I mean. Big newsworthy things coming out of that state. Could affect the SEC title picture and certainly the national playoff picture as well. So we'll get to that. A lot more as well. So if you want to join us, 713-780-3776. It wasn't a fun day as far as Texans news was concerned, but it was an interesting one. So a lot to get to there. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
So this Athletic article has rankings for all the quarterbacks. The Ringer has their own ranking. You can go across any publication that does this, that talks about sports, and they're going to have a quarterback ranking. As part of their NFL coverage. CJ's 17th in these rankings. I believe he started the season at 12. So, of course, he continues to drop because of his play. That's subjective. It's not that important what he says about the rankings. But the question, as I mentioned going to break, is the one that isn't a question that had been asked really up until maybe this year or this week. Are you going to pay CJ Stroud what a quarterback, at least considering his rookie year, would command. What a quarterback would command based off his rookie year. Because there's nothing based off the last season plus that would say, yeah, give him the max extension or whatever you want to term it as far as young quarterback, do a big deal. You got to give it to him because of how good he's been. There's nothing that says that should be a guarantee. You're solely basing it off of what you believe he could be because of what 2023 was. So, if I go by this particular stat, and it's just one of many, it's the EPA stat. EPA to break it down simply is you compare a quarterback to other quarterbacks who qualify in the same situation and kind of what they're doing to help their team. Like, there's a specific definition for it, but that's kind of the breakdown. If I put you in the same situation as another quarterback, let's say 3rd and 5 in the fourth quarter, what do you do to help your team on that drop back compared to all the other quarterbacks in that particular type of situation? CJ's ranked 28th out of 33 qualifying quarterbacks. So the numbers aren't good, but then you start adding some of the names. Joe Flacco, Cooper Rush, and this is since the beginning of the 24 season. Gardner Minshew, Spencer Rattler, Will Levis. Those are the names he's keeping company with since the beginning of the 2024 season. Does that sound like a list of guys you want to pay a lot of money to? I would imagine not. So
no, at least Will Levis was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. Bad.
CJ's mistakes aren't even that fun. Yeah. Like Will Levis.
His shenanigans, there's no whimsy to it.
Yes. CJ's mistakes, aren't great. Yeah. Will Levis is parallel to the ground, flipping the ball someplace.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Going like this in the middle of a play.
Yes. CJ's just, when he doesn't do well, it's just basic quarterback mistakes. If we're going to do the mistake thing, at least be funny about it.
Jameis Winston has a complete rebrand, a PR rebrand, because those fun mistakes.
We're not getting any of the fun from CJ. We're getting a lot of bland football, and it's unfortunate because the ceiling appeared to be very high about what he could be. And right now, combination of his play, bad play calls, and bad talent on his offensive line, it's led to him being in the range of journeyman Joe Flacco, career backups at this point, and a couple younger players who we don't think much of.
He got moved on from, more or less.
Well, Spencer Rattler was a bit of hang on, but they tried to move on from him. But Tyler Shuck isn't good enough.
I guess two guys that had quarterbacks drafted, their teams drafted a quarterback, whether it's Cam Ward or Tyler Shuck.
Yeah. It's not great. It is not the end, clearly. He's got all of this year to figure it out. We're just trending poorly, and it's not just these first three games.
Yeah, since he big broed Caleb.
It is, at least internet-wise, the line of demarcation. When he big broed Caleb Williams, that was the turn.
Look, they started 2-0 that year, so it's a good cutoff of like to cut out all the good stuff from last year.
It's true. Now you got to include the playoff win, but since that point, since winning those two games to start the year, what are they? They went on to win.
They went 10-7,
and then won a playoff game. So they
8-7 plus a playoff.
Yeah, they were 9-7 after that point, and now 0-3, 9-10, right? Since the big bro.
Yeah, well, and a playoff loss.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're right. 9-11 since that big bro incident, and what a playoff loss it was.
Tremendous.
Getting hit a lot of times. Getting sacked like 8 times.
Looking back. Chiefs, we should have known then that they only beat the Texans by 8 or whatever it was.
Yeah, but that's how the Chiefs won all their games last year.
That is
so
true.
We just assumed.
That is
of
true.
Course, they did make another Super Bowl. They just got their ass kicked by the Eagles.
They're like, we can do even being a crappy team, we can beat the Bills in the playoffs.
See, it's an interesting thought process for the Texans. We pushed the AFC dynasty, I'll put it like that. They have been at least at minimum an AFC dynasty. We pushed the Chiefs. We're in a one-possession game. Sure, we got some offensive line problems.
Yep.
And you know how we fix them? By getting a bunch of guys no one else wanted. But as I jokingly talked about a lot this offseason, they just thought the power of friendship was going to get it done.
We were just like, this is what they are selling us.
We were like willing to
entertain it
because we didn't know, although in our heads in our hearts we kind of knew, but we didn't have the evidence. And you know, all the guys out at training camp, the reporters, which is more proof you can never trust someone who just is watching training camp practices, hey, they look more physical, the guys are working out, and the vibe is different as far as how they practice.
I mean, that's
and
good.
How they warm up and how all that stuff is different. No,
it's
one's
nice.
Off to the side, stuff like that. That's all stuff that doesn't matter.
No.
It doesn't really matter because at some point you got Hines Allen on the other side, and Trevon Walker and Jared Verse and all the pass rushers you got to see. all that stuff about how good they are and how different they are in training camp, now we got real games to play.
Yeah, yeah. And bring it back to CJ. There's a text in on Jeremy and Joe yesterday where they're like, how long till you have to worry about CJ Stroud like wanting out, basically, demanding a trade with David Mulugeta.
Yeah.
You have to remember, it's David Mulugeta. And my immediate reaction is, do we have to be worried if he demands a trade? Is he so good that you have to worry that he demands a trade?
Not since the start of 2024.
Like, is that something that we have to be, like, keeping ourselves up at
night? As a franchise, the thought of, as someone they likely still believe in, asking out and not being all in it at the quarterback spot, it's troublesome.
Yeah.
But for someone who doesn't have to make those decisions, and it's just decisions, and just watching week to week, I mean, I'm like, at this point, you know what? How many picks?
Like, yeah.
There was a conversation in a group, in my group chat, about how much would it take for a team to pry CJ Stroud away. And the offer put up didn't even include first round picks. And my first reaction was, who's giving that up for him right now? Who's willing to do that now? Of course, there's someone out there, because there's always someone who thinks they can get a guy right. So there would be teams out there who would give up quite a bit. But watching him over the last 20 plus weeks of football, as far as going back to 2024, I'm like, I would like to see him play better before I would give up that type of haul.
It's a funny thing of like, you almost need him to play a little bit better to like
get a
first and some other stuff that you can draft a terrible offensive lineman with.
I'm not.
Because that's my thing of like, yeah, you can use those draft picks to address the offensive line, use one of them to like figure something out at quarterback. But it's like, well, who do I want drafting those offensive linemen? Not Nick Caserio.
I am not of the mindset that any of this conversation we're having as far as a trade, it should be seriously considered.
Madden GMing.
This is all thinking about what people may be thinking about. But we would have never even entertained it at the start of last year.
At the very least, he's played to the level where if you're negotiating with David Mulugeta, like, you have some cards. You have, like, a relatively good position of, like, hey, listen, we don't have to give you the – do we have to give you the Trevor Lawrence deal? The Jags didn't want to give Trevor Lawrence – or now they immediately regret giving him the Trevor Lawrence deal. Do we have to – it has to be $55 million? It has to start at $55 million a year? It just has to. Okay.
I understand what you're saying, but have you met David Mulugeta? You think he believes this is CJ's issue?
No. But
so while you think you may have leverage,
then do your job. Find him a spot that's willing to give up some draft picks for him.
But
there you go, David.
Teams operate so much out of fear at the thought of losing a good young quarterback, particularly tend to cave quickly.
Look at all the top quarterbacks, or top paid quarterbacks. There's a lot of guys where you're like, they kind of had to hold their nose and sign this.
That's true, but even those quarterbacks have years where you could find things that extend past year one where they're like, okay, he led the league in quarterback rating. His team did this.
Even like the, you know, Tua's deal where you're like, now you're like, he was a good quarterback in, what was that,
23?
22, yeah.
Yeah.
Even like the Herbert stuff. Like, well, you see it. you see the, like, okay. Lawrence is the only one where you're just kind of like.
Never really got what the hell
that,
was going
that
on.
That is
there.
The biggest, I guess, feather in the cap of the thinking of the GMing scared of like, well, we don't want to lose our guy because he's our guy. And that's so far Stroud's biggest, like, you know, thing to wield is that, what, you want to go back to Davis Mills time? No, sign me.
You want to keep missing the playoffs?
No, I'm
like you used to when I wasn't here?
There are
things in his favor. It's just,
they're going to miss the playoffs this year with you.
That's true. But it was completely a unanimous thought that whenever the time came.
Oh, yeah. It was like, is he going to get 60?
Hand him the biggest check you can. Now, you need him to pull out of this rut.
Yeah.
Him and the team need to do it before people feel good about doing that.
Stafford to retire and the Rams to throw some draft picks to get him. That was what Joe threw out there. He was like, what if Stafford retires?
We can dream, I guess. My hope is that...
That sweet, like 25th pick in the draft.
My hope is that it doesn't come to that, but... The conversations are starting to be had, not just locally, but nationally.
I'm getting my Nussmeier jersey ready.
Your Montreal Alouettes Nussmeier jersey? All right, we'll go to...
My Fernando Mendoza jersey.
Yeah, more like it. Maybe John Mateer when that finger heals. We'll talk about that.
Take as much time as you need, John.
Yeah, I bet. You've got a vested interest in him not showing up immediately.
He's got a long future ahead of him.
Sure. All right, we will talk some college football because that news came down yesterday. A couple programs, one in the Big 12, one in the SEC, both in Oklahoma, had big news go down. So we'll get to that in the second hour. If you want to join us, 713-780-3776. But first, Sean's going to tell you about Prize Picks.
Yes, Prize Picks, America's number one daily fantasy sports app, official partner of with the Houston Astros. And hey, listen, it's the Astros stretch run. They need to come through. They have Hunter Brown on the hill. This is our last stand. This is Jon Snow falling down in the Battle of the Bastards, standing up, holding his sword, and that sword is Hunter Brown and having a pitching score of more than 31.5. That's what I need from Hunter Brown to prove that he's willing to do whatever it takes to get this team the third wild card spot, and that's what he needs to do tonight in Sacramento against the A's. There's a lot of different ways to attack this pitcher, thinking that pitcher's going to have a good game. This is the best one I found for Hunter Brown. He's gone over or more than 31.5 four of his last five games. The strikeouts are at 5.5. He hasn't really been going over that very much. So give me the pitching score. More than 31.5. Basically, you need a quality start from him. And then I got to ride with my guy, Nick Kurtz. This guy, just at the very least, if he's going to send the Astros packing, you can make some money off of him and go with more than 1.5 total bases for Nick Kurtz tonight in Sacramento. Seems like he does it every time he faces the Astros. He did it last night. Maybe he does it one more night. So make some money off the Astros' misery and, maybe wake up to a little bit of money in your pocket. All you got to do is download the Prize Picks app today. Use promo code MAPES when you sign up to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. That's promo code MAPES on Prize Picks to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even have to win. That bonus is guaranteed. Prize Picks, it's good to be right.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.